Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with your politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. Even though you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This, God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And in the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him, and then you felt like you wasn't worthy, and so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room, and I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me, and I said, I want you to do this graph for me, and that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't, Lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Okay, today's It's My House is titled Grown-Ass Man Training. Grown-Ass Man Training, inspired by a couple of videos that Kevin Samuels put out. And we're also going to cover, or at least play one audio from yesterday on Africa's Dirty Secret, in case people, because we didn't have any discussion yesterday. I was out running errands, so I sort of like put the podcast on automatic pilot while I was out. So we didn't take any calls yesterday. Anyway, so, but Grown-Ass Man Training, once again inspired by Kevin Samuels. So let's get to the first clip. And a little trending news piece. The city of Evanston, Illinois, leads the country with the first reparations program for black residents. This is as of yesterday, last night. The nation's first government reparations program for African Americans was approved Monday night in the Chicago suburb of Evanston, Illinois. Action that advocates say represents a critical step in rectifying wrongs caused by slavery, segregation, and housing discrimination, and pushing forward on similar compensation efforts across the country. Right now, the whole world is looking at Evanston, Illinois. This is a moment like none other. that we have ever seen, and it's a good moment, says Ron Daniels, president of the National African American Reparations Committee, I mean Commission, which wants to redress local, redress at the local and federal levels. So that all goes into what we're talking about today, grown-ass man training. Let's get to the first clip.
Because you're making $14 an hour at McDonald's, you can go over to OnQ or Circle K or a convenience store and make another $14 an hour. $14 an hour one place is $28,000 one year. Then another $14, that's $42,000. Then you can actually be in a position to move out of your mama's house, move into an all-furnished apartment, get you a little sugar shake or a bike, and get out there and start doing something.
Let's say there's a 25-year-old man. Let's make him 30.
Okay.
30-year-old guy. He's staying at home, working at a fast food joint, making $18,000 to $22,000 a year.
Okay.
Not a lot of confidence, not a lot of skill sets, but he wants to be a leader. He wants to have a happy relationship, and he wants to leave a legacy. What is your advice to a man in that position?
Stop digging. You already did stop digging. First thing, I'm big on therapy, but if you're not in a position where you don't have a lot of money right now, every company you work for has an employee assistance line. You need somebody to talk to. We're not in a church like we used to be. Find someone who's a consultant pro bono. The second thing, because it has to start with the head. We can't get the head right, we get nothing. Second, he's working full-time at a fast food place? Good, I need you to have another part-time job. Because you're making $14 an hour at McDonald's, you can go over to OnQ or Circle K or a convenience store and make another $14 an hour. $14 an hour one place is $28,000 one year. Then another $14, that's $42,000. Then you can actually be in a position to move out of your mama's house, move into an all-furnished apartment, get you a little sugar shake or a bike, and get out there and start doing something. See, men, we have to work. I cannot hear that I'm broke, and then you're only working 40 hours a week. That does not compute with me. You got to work. You got to work and you're getting paid for the hours. You know, here's the thing that tends to start correct themselves. Once a man puts himself in a position where his head's a little bit on straight, and it does not have to be perfect. You can't wait till this is perfect. You got to do all these things at the same time. Start getting your head on, getting your head together, get the hours up, and then you have to get a skill set. College ain't for everybody. It's not everything everyone needs. Get a trade. There are plenty of things to do. What is going to be useful? Get a trade in something that's going to be useful. We have to get back to where we value blue-collar labor. You know, I'm a big proponent of blue-collar. I call them blue Henrys. You know, yeah, the white-collar.
Break down what does Henry mean for people who don't know?
Henry is high earner, not rich yet. That came from Forbes. And see, the white-collar men get all the shine, but, you know, white-collar men, it's a longer path, takes more to get to the end, and most small business owners are blue-collar. Plumbers, electricians, HVAC technicians, truck drivers who own a logistics firm. There's a lot of opportunities. We mentioned Gary Vee. He wasn't a great student. He's a multimillionaire and owns one of the most prolific social media firms in the world. Get your head right, get your money, get you some sort of certification or skill to where you can actually start making yourself of use, because fast food is not a long-term thing. Then you got to start networking with other people and start working together. When you work with a group of people, one of the reasons my career went the way it was is because I was with a group of seven people to where we all moved each other up. I only want you in the house sleeping, showering, and on the bathroom. And there's no reason to be at home. You got to get the work done, because here's the thing. Do that for at least 5 years. Put your head down, work your butt off, and you will look up, and the rest of your life will be brighter possibilities. You have more potential and brighter possibilities than you ever thought you could have. Or if you continue to do what you do, you're going to continue to get what you got, and now you'll have no one else to blame but yourself, because at least now you've been given the direction. Now, from that point on, you make adjustments. But I'm a big proponent in your rat pack, your group of guys you hang around with, mentoring and coaching. But those two things require resources and money. Everything else I gave you is just up to you. That's the underlying thing. But if you are doing your work, following your why, your life will be fulfilling enough to where you can, whatever you attract, you'll attract like-minded people. And you'd be surprised that women are even drawn to that. But it doesn't have to, women should not be the reason. They should be the add-on. They're the help me. They're there to be, I hate to use this term, but I will, they're an add-on for you. And see, when you grow up without a father or that kind of thing, you know, we're trying to please mom so much, so guys get lost in that, so they take their eye off their purpose and they start trying to do this, and that's too much pressure to be over there. See, more men need to be around other men. If we have to build an organization, we are going to rank ourselves. Someone has to be the CEO, CFO, CIO, the regional manager, this, that, and the workers. We have learned how to work together by ranking ourselves, and there's no problem in ranking. You can have even like on YouTube, it goes in cycles. You may be hot, but how can you be helpful or useful to somebody else? And men have to realize that you gain more gratification out of life by working with others, working with other men, and that's really what attracts women. Because the average everyday guy who's working with another guy, he's making bagels, you making peanut butter, you making jelly, you making bread, y'all making sandwiches. Guess what? Y'all so busy making sandwiches. Next thing the women in the village are like.
That's another thing I want to say. People don't be going to work, bro. Like, all of us still work. We all still have jobs.
So the lie detector test determined that was a lie.
You know who it is. You know React. It's the Pod Mitch. Back with another one. Who I got to my Rizzi?
You already know it's your boy Zay Robs.
It's your boy Will.
And it's your boy Jake.
And you know it's IBEH in the building. So we got some more. Kevin Samuels teaches man how to level up. Personally, in my opinion, I think the first step you got to do when leveling up is first and foremost like, commenting, and subscribing to this video. And then after that, you know, be a stater. but let's just get right into it.
Because you make $14 an hour at McDonald's, you go over to On Cue or Circle K or a convenience store and make another $14 an hour.
We never really mentioned this. This is from the Roommate podcast, by the way. That boy Hafiz and the other guy.
My boy B-Lo. That's my boy B-Lo.
Wait a minute. I always forget
you. I know my boy B-Lo.
Is Kevin Samuels' hairline drawn on?
Die.
Come on. Die. Come on.
It's a 25-year-old man. Let's make him 30. Okay, 30-year-old guy. He's staying at home. He working at a fast food joint, making $18,000 to $22,000 a year.
Okay.
Not a lot of confidence, not a lot of skill sets, but he wants to be a leader. He wants to have a happy relationship, and he wants to leave a legacy. What is your advice to a man in that position?
What would y'all say?
Who gonna go first? I'll go first. I say first and foremost, live in the moment for real. Just relax, because I feel like everybody just is all stressed about what's going on around them. Look in the mirror and look at your life first and foremost, because people be worried about what other people got going on too much. You know what I'm saying? So look at your life and then secondly, look at the distractions in your life. And you know those distractions. Sometimes people are oblivious to them. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes you might think that, you know, oh, they're not that bad. No, you know they're distractions, and then get rid of them. Like, you know what I'm saying? That's what I would say, starting off.
I would say definitely you guys take accountability for your actions, for sure. I feel like that's the main key. You got to be accountable for your actions, and you got to become financially literate. Like, I was talking to my brother. I don't mean to expose him, but he was like, he told me, he's like, what y'all laughing at, man? But he was telling me how, because I'm into stocks and like all that stuff, and he was telling me how, that's you good with that. You was blessed with that ability. No, I wasn't. No, I was not. Like a year ago, I didn't even know how a bank account worked. Like, I didn't know there was a savings, check-ins, and, like, reserve account. I didn't know none of that. Mm. All I knew, my mom, I'd give my mom money, and she would put it in my account. Mm. But I hate to brag, but I'm up 91% on my investments. I made $6,000 so far. I wasn't born. You're not born with this stuff. A lot of people look at people doing good. Oh, he was blessed with it. Mm. Yeah, it's a blessing, but I had to learn that. You know what I'm saying? I didn't start off knowing how stocks. I just learned about stocks 6 months ago. Like, it's not just given to you. You got to work for it. You know what I'm saying? So become financially literate. And don't complain and say, oh, I was never good at that. Learn to be good at it.
Yeah. What I would like to say is you have to become conscious that you're stuck in a rat race at the time. He's talking about someone that's like working at McDonald's, fast food joint, something like that. Become conscious of where you're at in your life and figure out ways to get out of it. So what I would say is learning how to set up multiple streams of passive income. Find ways to make money that you don't have to put a lot of effort into. Once you start figuring those out, you don't have to work as much. And you have more free time to worry about shit that's important to you. So that's the number one goal I have in my life right now, is escaping the rat race. Mm. So
yeah, pretty much y'all covered everything I had to say. I just wanted to pretty much. All I was going to say was you need to just basically just understand what the situation you're in, understand what cards you was dealt, and need to make the best out of that situation, because one man's journey is one man's journey. That's a motto I like to say a lot. So you just need to understand that your particular situation is only applicable to you. You can't, like, get someone else to try to walk in your shoes and live your life, because it's just not possible. Like, everyone literally has their own brain, so they wouldn't even think the way you would think. So I just think understanding what situation you're in is the first step, and then, like he said, trying to get as much free time, like, having them, well, that's not minimum wage, but 18, 20 an hour, that's really just going to get you by. So you need to understand that you're in that situation. You need to live below your means for that time. And then even when you get to a higher point, making more money, you need to, what Graham be saying? Lifestyle inflation. You need to avoid lifestyle inflation.
Mm-hmm. Don't people be doing that?
Yeah, don't just because you start getting money, don't think you got to buy, like, a new car or, like, a new apartment, a new condo or something. Live below your means and, like, act broke still.
Yeah. I just want to say another thing, like a big thing I used to do, like people my age, you like our age, I used to say, man, they don't teach you this stuff in school. Then just go back to doing the same old BS I was doing. Then one day I was like, man, they don't teach you this in school. I got to learn it myself. You got to do it yourself. And if you want to learn it yourself, check out Graham Stevens on YouTube. He helped me a lot. It got me really financially literate. Check him out. But let's get back into the video.
I can check out Zay Robbs.
Stop digging. They already did stop digging. First thing, I'm big on therapy, but if you're not in a position where you don't have a lot of money right now, every company you work for has an employee assistance line you need somebody to talk to. We're not in a church like we used to be. Find someone who's a consultant pro bono. The second thing, because it has to start with the head. We can't get the head right, we get nothing. Second, you making...
That's some real shit right there. He's talking right now. If your mentality in the wrong place, you won't grow.
Herb said, I gotta get my bread right. But first, I gotta get my head right.
Hey, yo, if you, males, put that pride to the side. Stunt your groove.
Yeah,
don't have too much pride.
My fault.
No, you good.
I was saying, y'all think y'all know it all. What Socrates say? Socrates said, the wisest man knows that he knows nothing at all. You feel me? At the end of the day, we got God put all these people on this planet so we can learn from them. You know what I'm saying? Like, why wouldn't, like, the information's out there. That's all I got to say.
People don't be using the internet. That shit's a tool for real.
Everything you need to know is on the internet, bro.
Oh, God.
He's working full-time at a fast food place? Good, I need you to have another part-time job. Because you're making $14 an hour at McDonald's, you go over to On Q or Circle K, or a convenience store, make another $14 an hour. $14 an hour one place is $28,000 one year. Then another $14, that's $42,000. Then you can actually be in a position to move out of your mama's house, move into an all-furnished apartment, get you a little sugar shaker or a bike, and get out there and start doing something. See, men, we have to work. I cannot hear that I'm broke, and then you're only working 40 hours a week. That does not compute with me. You got to work. You got to work and you're getting paid for the hours. You know, here's the thing that seems to start correct themselves. Once a man puts them.
And that's another thing I want to say. People don't be going to work, bro. Like, all of us still work. We all still have jobs.
Oh, the lie detector test determined that was a lie.
Three out of four of us.
Come on.
Making money.
I'm telling you, bro, my man's still getting bread. My man still gets to a bag. Don't ever, you know, misunderstand it. But people feel like they just try to skip that work. They don't want to dig in the dirt. My man Jeff Logue said, you got to dig in the dirt. You know what I'm saying? Plant that seed before the fruit can come. You know what I'm saying? You got, it's a process, man. People just be wanting to go on Instagram, be IG famous. You know what I'm saying? How you going to get money to put towards your ad so your name gets out there in marketing?
Mm. And one thing I want to mention too, if you, even when you're working, you got something you love to do, you owe it to yourself. Work on like what you would want to do, your side hustle too.
Mm-hmm.
You owe it to yourself. You can go work for somebody else. You owe it to yourself at least to give yourself an hour. You can do at least do 30 minutes every day to work on yourself and what you want to do. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, find a purpose. Find something that resonates with you that you wouldn't mind doing if you weren't getting paid. That's my favorite saying is,
mm-hmm.
find something that you would like to do even if you weren't getting paid for it.
Yeah.
If you can find something like that, the money's going to come.
Absolutely.
The money's going to come, especially as your skill goes up. You're going to start mm-hmm. being better than anybody else in the field.
Yeah, figure out ways to monetize it. You can monetize
especially
anything.
The internet nowadays, it's so mm-hmm. simple. Like, just post shit about the thing that you love.
You're not going to care about the money, too, if you really love it, too.
Absolutely.
The money going to be, like, just a plus, just a little extra.
Yeah.
And absolutely. Even when you is grinding, don't complain. Like, everybody got to do it unless you was born into the money. And to me, I mean, I can't speak because I wasn't born into the money, but that's not fun.
Right.
Born into the money. I mean, having the money's fun, but.
I know what you mean, bro.
But
not
like,
getting it from the muscle. I know
yeah,
what you
I feel
mean.
Like most humans had to grind for what they want. So,
absolutely.
Like,
yeah.
It's all a part of life.
And even you born into the money, take advantage of your circumstances and make the best out of them.
Yeah, look at Donald Trump. Man, I mean, this is a meme, but he said,
it has not been easy for me. And, you know, I started off in Brooklyn. My father gave me a small loan of $1 million.
And then he turned it into billions.
Yeah,
right,
right, right.
At the end of the day, he did have to turn it
like
into
most, most people, mm-hmm. I think they said it takes three generations for the wealth to get drained.
Mm.
Like the first kid, the one that makes the bread, usually passes it on to the next kid, and then he just has a little bit of fun, and he gives it to the third kid, and then they just fucking waste it all.
I just want to say, people that don't like Donald Trump, I don't know him.
He made money.
I'm playing. Let's get back in that video, though. Get it.
Put himself in a position where his head's a little bit on straight, and it does not have to be perfect. You can't wait till this is perfect. You got to do all these things at the same time. Start getting your head on, getting your head together, get the hours up, and then you.
Because he just said you can't wait till it's perfect.
That was my problem at first. I wanted to make sure things were extremely right rather than going in.
There's never going to be the perfect moment. Never. Yeah. Stop waiting. Just do it.
I saw a Gary Vee post the other day. He said he was talking to this rapper, and he was like, "Oh, my song needed to be perfect before I put it out." And he said that's really just insecurity.
Mm-hmm.
You're scared of people not thinking your stuff is good enough yet.
Yeah.
You need to understand that it's a process. And the more you put shit out, the more you post it, eventually you're going to find that one viral video, that one ticket to success.
And look at our first video quality compared to now. That's to say enough.
Prime example.
What is that? Oh, shit. What is that?
Mm. Have to get a skill set. College ain't for everybody. It's not anything everyone needs. Get a trade. There are plenty of things to do. What is going to be useful? Get a trade in something that's going to be useful. We have to get back to where we value blue-collar labor. You know, I'm a big proponent of blue-collar. I call them blue Henrys. You know, yeah, the white-collar...
Break down what does Henry mean for people who don't know?
Henry is high earner, not rich yet. That came from Forbes. And see, the white-collar men get all the shine, but, you know, white-collar men, it's a longer path, takes more to get to the end, and most small business owners are blue-collar. Plumbers, electricians, HVAC technicians, truck drivers who own a logistics firm. There's a lot of opportunities. We mentioned Gary Vee. He wasn't a great student. He's
just talking about Gary Vee.
Great minds think
alike. Millionaire and holds owns one of the most prolific social media firms in the world. Get your head right, get your money, get you some sort of certification or skill to where you can actually start making yourself of use, because fast food is not a long-term thing. Then you got to start networking with other people and start working together.
Absolutely.
When you work with a group of people, one of the reasons my career went the way it was is because I was with a group of seven people to where we all moved each other up.
That right there, that's another thing. That's another thing. And when you were going back to what you were saying, that pride, like people be, no, I want to do it by myself, bro. I don't care what nobody say. You ain't never did it by yourself, bro. All these rappers that say, man, I got it by myself. There's a producer. There's a producer making your beats, bro.
Yeah,
they have writers.
That's facts.
You didn't do it by yourself, bro. Like, if you look up the most famous rappers like Hov, there's artists like Ye that wrote some of his verses. And it's documented, bro. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, put that pride aside. One more thing I want to say is, too, like cancel out the doubters, bro. Like, if you literally have somebody, like, that doesn't see your vision, you know what I'm saying, and is telling you anything to make you second-guess it, yo, just stop listening. Like, that's not advice. That is literally them telling you that they couldn't do it, so they don't think you can. Okay. That is all that is, bro. I promise you.
Mm-hmm.
I promise you, because 90% of people in the world aren't doing what we're doing. Like, I hate to brag and I hate to say it, bro. Like, nobody thinks that this YouTube thing could work out. You know what I'm saying? But we get into it every day. Yeah. We don't care what everybody else says.
Mm-hmm.
Facts.
You gotta get out your comfort zone.
Well, show me your friends and I'll show you your future. That's a really good line.
Mm.
You gotta surround yourself with greatness. I've always looked for great people in my life. Always. If you're a friend of mine, odds are you're a good ass person. So. That's if you can say that about your friends, that means you're on the right track.
Thanks, Will.
I only want you in the house sleeping, showering, and in the bathroom. And there's no reason to be at home. You got to get the work done because here's the thing. Do that for at least 5 years. Put your head down, work your butt off, and you will look up, and the rest of your life will be brighter possibilities. You have more potential and brighter possibilities than you ever thought you could have.
But you know why a lot of people can't do what he's saying?
What's that?
Females.
Mm.
The biggest distraction for men. Females.
They'll see the cat.
Squirrel. They could be the biggest asset and also the biggest distraction. Because a lot of people, it's tough, but a lot of people go to the gym to get big for females, not for themselves. A lot of people want to make money for females. That's why a lot of rappers talk about females.
Yeah.
They wasn't getting them before. And I mean, you can use females as a way for motivation, you feel me? But don't just be chasing them. Like,
mm-hmm.
That's just...
It's not your number one priority.
Yeah, that's not,
mm-hmm. not at all.
It's not how you should be moving.
And don't start blaming them when your life's not going how you want it to.
Yeah.
Take accountability for your actions. It's not them. It's you.
Yeah, it is you. OGs in the comments.
But we're going to link the rest of this video in the description.
You want to wrap it up?
Yeah, y'all got any final thoughts?
Just be yourself, man. Be yourself. Like that's the most intricate thing I've been, you know, learning on my journey and my path to greatness is to literally... Stop worrying about what everybody else thinks, bro. Everybody's opinion doesn't matter. Unless they're really trying to uplift you and make you better in your path, it doesn't matter. I promise you.
Look at how they treated Jesus.
Mm.
Look at how they treated Jesus.
They even hated on
they
Jesus.
Yeah. Just listen, child. Learn from everybody around you.
Mm.
And just take what you can from anybody and just try to implement it to yourself and grow.
No cap. I was working at... Home Depot a couple months ago, the boy in there, he was telling me he started off in some department, I forget, but he said he used to avoid like the paint department because they didn't know nothing about paint. And one day he just said he was tired of like not knowing about paint, so he went out and started studying all the paint in the store or whatever. So he was basically telling me that just to say like if he asked me to do something in the store, he would only tell me to do that. He wouldn't tell me to do that if he hadn't already done it before.
Mm-hmm.
So he was just basically telling me like, what I got from it,
mm-hmm.
you gotta go through the experience in order to be able to lead somebody else through the experience.
Mm-hmm. That's an OG mm-hmm. right there. That's an OG.
And I took that for real. Like, I was like, that's great advice. Thank you. Quit that job though.
But that's all for this video. We're gonna see you on the next video. Thank you for tuning in. Make sure you guys like, comment, subscribe, and let us know your thoughts in the comment section. We're gonna see y'all later.
All right, today's podcast was inspired actually by a text I got this morning on Kevin Samuels has a video on leveling up. And one on grown things that every father should teach his son. I'm paraphrasing grown-ass man training. So we titled this podcast today, Grown-Ass Man Training, which we're working on some stuff offline with it. So we played Summer Kevin Samuels and the reaction to Kevin Samuels leveling up. I'm going to give our It's My House version of that as well. And then yesterday I was running errands, so I sort of like put this podcast on autopilot, Africa's Dirty Secrets. So we're going to play a teeny bit of that. Open the phone lines for anything you guys want to talk about. But before we do that, this is from the movie Baby Boy. I think this ties into this grown-ass man training.
Brother, break bread with me, brother. Got that pure cake, no butter, no sugar. Asiatic, straight like my brother's soul. Yes, indeed. 7-Up cake, we got pound cake. And we...
Some of that pound cake.
Yes, indeed, brother. There you go. Thank you, brother. You have a good day today. Salam.
Today I begin a new life, for I am the master of my abilities, and today is going to be a great and beautiful day.
What?
I said, today I begin a new life, for I am the master of my abilities, and today is going to be a great and beautiful day.
Pillows, goose down, $35.
P, you a buyer or a seller?
What? Videos, homie. Videos? DVD? CD? Masterpiece? Charlie's Angels?
Look at yourself.
How many millionaires you got on, bruh? I count at least 3. Man, what the fuck are you talking about? P! Look around, man. You see what I see? I see money. Look at my man over there selling t-shirts. Brother over there selling pies and papers. Cake man over there. Everybody moving, making money. Right? While we standing still being broke. I figured all this shit out, man. All this. This whole world moves forward through transactions. Commerce, nigga. The exchange of goods and services. All the real baller successful folks are sellers. And all the broke-ass people playing catch-up are buyers. I ain't trying to go out like that, Pete. I'm going to be a seller. I'm going to get my own business. Change the game.
And I think that's one of the things that every father or parent should teach their young children, to run the family business. One high-profile example is former President Donald Trump. His father and grandmother started a business. And then Donald Trump's father taught him the business. Now Donald Trump has taught his children and still teaching his children how to run and grow the family business. And you know the grandkids and the great-grands, when they roll around, well, he's just at the grandfather stage right now. But I'm sure they'll be taught how to run, manage, maintain, and grow the family business. Now, you can be anything you want to be. But just from an It's My House point of view, I'm just saying. And that's Kevin Samuels. He's got like a 2-hour thing on grown-ass man training. So that's too long for what we do here. But it's on YouTube and the leveling up. But he has his way. He's a fashion consultant. That's his niche. But, there's some other fundamental things, but, you know, we'll get into that. Now, yesterday, we played a lot of audio on America's Dirty Secret. Let me read this. And I was running errands, so I wasn't even at the board yesterday, majority of the time. Let me see. In Evansville, Illinois, they have, let me read the article. Let me see if I can find it. Okay. Evansville, Illinois, they have, here it is. All right, Evanston, Illinois, not Evansville. Evanston, Illinois, I'm reading the headline here out of the Washington Post. Evanston, Illinois, this is the headline, leaves the country with the first reparations program for black residents. And I'll read this. It says, the nation's first government reparations program for African Americans was approved Monday night, that's last night, in the Chicago suburb of Evanston, Illinois. Advocates say that represents a critical step in rectifying wrongs caused by slavery and segregation and housing discrimination and pushing forward on the similar compensation efforts across the country. Right now, the whole world is looking at Evanston, Illinois. This is a moment like none other that we've ever seen, and it's a good moment, says Ron Daniels, president of the National African Reparations Commission. And he which wants to redress local and wants redress at the local and federal levels. The Evans, you know, that's another. Why I'm talking about another thing that I think parents should teach their children: the law. You don't have to go to law school, but some basic things that parents should teach their children: the paralegal version of the law. You know, I'm just going by what we see, the barometer that we see with us getting arrested, getting shot in the street and all that. On a critical mass basis, I don't think the typical black youth in this country particularly. I'm just going across the board because we don't know enough about estate planning. No, we don't know enough about generational wealth, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, getting back to this, the Evanston City Council approved the first phase of the reparations to acknowledge the harm caused by discriminatory housing policies, practices, and inaction going back to more than a century. The 8-to-1 vote will initially make $400,000 available in $25,000 home ownership and improvement grants, as well as mortgage assistance for black residents, primarily those that can show that they are direct descendants of individuals who lived in the city between 1919 and 1969. I got a problem with that already. But anyway, and suffered from such discrimination. The housing, well, they've came up with their own, to come up with their own version of The housing money is part of a larger $10 million package approved for the continued reparations of incentives, which will be funded by income from the annual cannabis taxes over the next decade. Black residents make up 16% of Evanston's population of 75,000. More than 60 people spoke before the vote. You know what? Okay. I'm going to play a little bit from just one little short clip from yesterday, Africa's Dirty Secret. Because I think when you're talking about reparations, and let's talk about reparations chess. Let's look at the reparations chessboard. Remember, in the game of chess, the first thing you need to get to know and memorize is the landscape. In the game of chess, the landscape is the chess board. How many spaces? You know, what players go to which place? So let's look at the chess board, the reparations chess board, and we're going to go back and take a look at Africa's Dirty Secret. We're going to just play a short clip because this all ties into grown-ass man training as well.
Remember, this bulletin is streaming live on 3news.com. It is also live on DSTV channel 279. We settle for the big one. Others of Trokosi Shrines at Kleko in the K2 South Municipality of the Volta region have rejected accusations the practice is an abuse of the rights of young girls and that Trokosi young teenage virgin girls are sent to fetish shrines for several years to atone for offenses committed by their family members. In the first of a two-part story, Nana Kweku Edua brings you the inside story of Trokosi.
According to the Trokosi tradition practiced in the Volta region among the Tong and Anlons, virgin girls are given to village priests as a way of appeasing the gods for crimes committed by family members. The word Trokosi in the Ewa language means slaves of the gods. Kleko, in the Kete South municipality of the Volta region, is well known for the practice of Trokosi. To meet the priests and elders of the various shrines and get closer to the shrines, one must take off shirts and shoes. After several minutes of deliberations, elders decided to answer some pertinent questions bothering the minds of many concerning the activities.
You keep virgin girls here around you. You don't allow them go anywhere. They are taken by some of you, and then they are kept here until they grow old and they die.
That's why you're talking about. You're asking me. It's not like that. Truly, we receive images. You see, that is the fear shiris. When they are brought, the first rituals was performed for them instantly. Then they go back to their hometown. The second one, if the family is ready, they are prepared, they come. It is performed for them. Then they go back. Even if they are school-going ages people, they are still going to school. They go back for their schools. We don't keep them there.
Does the Trokosi practice discriminate against women and children?
Fiashiri, they are queen mothers. Everybody respects them. Even you are not allowed to beat her. If you venture, you beat her, you destroy yourself. The deity will not allow you.
Some fetish priests and shrine owners have been accused of having absolute sexual control over their slaves, and they have also been accused of raping them with a claim that Trokosi slaves are like priestesses who make love with the gods through their earthly servants, the priests. So we caught up with a 16-year-old who was brought to the shrine some 2 weeks ago.
I was just finding out from her, there's a young child who is here, whether her coming here is good or not. She thinks it's a good thing for her to be kept here or not. And she's finding it difficult to really answer me on that. We are okay with her. She says she's okay here.
Many like her, we learned, have been given the free will to decide what they want to do for themselves to improve their lives while at the shrines. Although some of these girls may wish to rejoin their families as soon as possible, they may have to wait a little longer until they finish the atonement of sins they never committed. From Kleko, Nana Kwekwedia for TV3 News.
So let's stay on this very issue. Bright Apia is the Executive Director of Child Rights International and joins us on phone to discuss this issue. Good evening, sir, and thanks for your time.
Good evening.
Now, will you categorize this particular practice as a child rights abuse, and why?
Yes, this is a clear violations of child rights, in the sense that if you look at the concept itself, it is not something that children themselves will do, but somebody who has done it, and children must be sent there to for the atonement of a sin that somebody else has committed. So one, it is not done with the consent of the child, which the law provides that that should be the case, that there are instances that children should give consent to the things that they do. But if you look at the way it is, it's a compelling thing that while that thing has been committed against the gods, somebody must be there to serve. So clearly, that itself violates the right of the child. And then the issue of whether or not at a certain age children can even go there, because by law, a child can only be responsible in terms of criminal activities at the age of 12 years. And in this case, you cannot even classify it as a criminal activity. So the law provides certain things that you cannot do against children, especially where any act at all takes the child out of the classroom, or it becomes some kind of a torture or emotional torture or whatever torture that we'll call it to the child, then that will also amount to the violation of the child's right. But if you look at the fundamental principle, the basis for which this practice is done, it has nothing to do with the child. It's not as if the child has committed any offense and all that. So right from the beginning, you realize that it's not an act that really supports the right of children. So whichever way we look at it, it's not something that we should even get children involved in it at all. Whoever has committed the offense, by their own culture, they believe in their own principle and think that somebody must serve for it. And I think that the person who has committed it must be the same person to serve for it. I don't think that children should suffer the consequences of the actions of somebody. You know, so those are the things that, for us, we need to also begin to look at and then send a signal out there for people to know, so that we can preserve the dignity of children, because there are a lot of things that comes with it, you know. But the privacy and dignity of the child must also be protected, and the child must also grow in a safe and protective environment. But once we cannot guarantee that, then I don't see why any act whatsoever within the context of culture should put children into such kind of slavery conduct. And this is an act that the state itself has taken both steps to say that it is something that we need to abolish, you know. So if the state has taken that position and all children belong to the state, I think that if some of these things are going on, the state apparatus must be there to also ensure that they deal with some of these issues once and for all.
Now, what should be the approach of the gender ministry in addressing the negatives of trogozi without hurting tradition? Because we know in several parts of the country, this tradition is very strong there.
Yes, of course, it is. But the issue is that the state has taken a position that trogozi is not an act that we should practice against our children. Children should not be involved in it at all. So when the state has taken position on that, then within that, the state must also ensure that they have strategies to deal with it. But if I'm to handle this issue, I think that we've passed a level where, because we've had a lot of engagement with these people, some also listen to the issue that we raised, and some also are still practicing the act under the umbrella of saying that they are not violating their rights, it's a normal practice, those who want to go to school, they allow them to go and all that. We've heard all those things over and over again. But this is something that the state has taken a position. So the state must ensure that once they are not ready to listen, certain action must also come to bear to ensure that they safeguard children from this kind of act, you know. So it is not that we want to say that trogozi is a bad system. It is for a group of people who believe in the principles of it. But once the state has enacted a law that states that in all matters the interest of the child should be paramount, that should be our golden rule, and that should be what should guide all of us. So with that principle, the state must ensure that they take all the necessary steps to deliver those children, place them in an environment that will be conducive for them, so that their dignity and privacy would also be preserved by the state. So those are the things that, for me, if there's any recommendation that I would make to the gender ministry, these are the things that I would say, that the steps that they have to take to ensure that they get these children out of that situation.
Indeed, you did indicate that most of the camps have been closed. A few others are still in operation. How do we confront this? How do we who are in this act that indeed this practice is an abuse of human rights, especially that of the children that they use?
I think that it's engagement is the first step that we need to take, and we've done that in the past. And if the need be, we should still continue to do that. Because in the past, if you look at the people who are managing the shrine and all that, also in terms of the educational level, you cannot compare it to those who are doing it now. You know, so there's some level of there's a level playing field where we can engage them for them to also understand. Yes, we know that in the past, professors have written articles to justify this practice and all that. But that notwithstanding, I think that the engagement process must still go on, because this is something that they've done for many years. So it's not just take a day to be able to deal with it. So the engagement process must still be ongoing. It should be a continuous thing that we should do for people until they come to the realization that this is the position of the state and this is what the state want to do. Therefore, everybody must fall in line with it and all that. So the engagement for me should still continue, and then to see how best we can protect our children.
We're grateful for your time on News at 10. Bright Appiah is the executive director of Child Rights International. He's been speaking to us about Trokosi and all the negative effects that we are currently experiencing in this country. That is it for the big one.
Okay. Okay, let me read from Wikipedia. Ritual servitude, which is Trokosi, is a practice in Ghana, Togo, and Benin. There's some other countries for starters. And they take human beings, usually young virgin girls, in payment for services or in religious atonement for alleged misdeeds of a family member. In Ghana and Togo, it is practiced in the Uwe tribe in the Volta region. In Benin, it is practiced by the Fon. These shrine slaves serve the priests, the elders, and the owners of the traditional religious shrine without remuneration and without their consent, although the consent of the family or clan may be involved. Those who practice ritual servitude usually feel that the girl is serving the god or gods of the shrine and is married to the gods of the shrine. If the girl runs away or dies, she must be replaced by another girl from the family. Some girls in the ritual, in this ritual servitude are the third and fourth girl in the family, suffering from the same crime, sometimes for something as minor as a loss of a trivial piece of property. This form of slavery, now this goes on in 2021, and has been going on before the white man set foot in Africa, just saying. This form of slavery is practiced in the Volta region of Ghana in spite of being outlawed in 1998, and despite carrying a minimum 3-year prison sentence for conviction, I imagine snitching is a crime that they probably have on the books too. Culturally speaking, among the UAE's practicing the ritual guana, or there's a lot on this, and it goes back even before the 18th century. There's quite a bit on this. So all I'm saying is, if you're going to play the reparations card, it seems like you need to be asking Ghana for reparations, Togo for reparations, Benin for reparations, and throw in, Nigeria and some other African countries. Just saying, they were doing it, and they were in the human resources business, and some people that came along from other parts of the world, They were selling their slaves. Human resources. That's the way they looked at it. In any event, so that's just a piece from yesterday. So if you guys want to talk about that, along with the Evanston, we know what, you know, the whatever they did last night in Evanston, Illinois, because they passed their own version of reparations, which people from, what did they say, 19, if you can prove, if you're a resident, if you're a black resident of Evanston, Illinois, and you had, and you can trace your lineage back to somebody from 1919 to what, 1969, I believe the article said, and you can prove that you were, I guess, injured or discriminated against or whatever. And this goes back to grown-ass man training. Like I said, Kevin Samuels is a fashion consultant. Okay. But there's a scene in Roots. They had manhood training. The Amish have, they might not call it manhood training, but there's certain things, even if you want to become a rocket scientist or anything. Matter of fact, a modern book, a contemporary book that sort of illustrates this is the book, and they have a video of it on YouTube, Possum Living, written by Dolly Freed. I'm see if I can get Dolly Freed on this podcast. Dolly Freed was homeschooled. She later became some kind of an engineer or whatever, but she was homeschooled. And Dolly Freed, her dad taught her basically how to buy a house. I'm going one step deep and say learn how to build one, but how to buy a debt-free house, how to grow food, how to catch food. The video's on YouTube, Possum Living. In the book, Dolly wrote a book about it. But Dolly went on, and she, like I say, if you got the basics of home training or what Kevin Samuels would call man training, I mean, you can go out and, like I say, if you want to become a rocket scientist or professional athlete or whatever, but you've got the basics covered on how to feed yourself without going to depending on whole foods or Piggly Wiggly or Winn-Dixie or Albertsons to feed you, and things of that nature. So, in any event, so anything you guys want to comment on grown? I mean, what do you think? What are some of the essentials that you think a parent or a father should teach their son or daughter? What are, you know, some that you know, because we can look, like I said, we can look at the barometers out here trending in society today. One barometer, like I say, I'm looking at from, let's go back to Emmett Till. From Emmett Till all the way to George Floyd. Okay. Let's use some of the high-profile events that have happened to black men. I think one of the things, fundamental essentials that black parents should teach to their children, particularly boys, is how to defend yourself. How to defend yourself. Even in the Emmett Till situation, because we can do some Monday morning quarterbacking on that whole event now. How to defend yourself. Another fundamental thing I think that's needed, using the barometer of Emmett Till all the way to George Floyd and all sorts of things in between, is the law. You know, what is a tort? What are the different distinctions of torts? What's the difference between a civil action and a criminal action? You know, what are the different types of court? How to maneuver in, you know, how do you maneuver in landlord-tenant court? How do you maneuver in small claims court? How do you maneuver in family court is more dangerous than criminal court. How do you maneuver in bankruptcy? You know, how do you maneuver in these different type of courts? The police department. What is the police department? How does it operate? How do they generate revenue? You know, some fundamental, like I say, you can have five kids. One might want to be a zoologist. The other one might want a rocket scientist. Another one might want to be Perry Mason. Other one might want to run for president of the United States. It doesn't matter. What are some fundamental things that you think that are needed? And I'm, like I said, I'm just using the contemporary barometers of that some of the contemporary barometers that I've noticed that, you know, they keep on repeating itself. So it like I say, from Emmett Till to George Floyd, it seems like a common denominator is we don't know how to defend ourselves. Number two, physically as well as legally. Those are two animals. Okay. And we can't rely, that's why I have a problem with reparations. We can't rely on outside forces to do it, because this whole at least my take on reparations is you're waiting on an outside force to make you whole, and a majority of people that have held on to that a lot of them have dropped dead. You know. You know, from 1919 to 1969, so they got their rules in place. But if you got some basic stuff, well, put it this way. You know, we had, Elvin Lee in here last Friday, Amish economics. If you're set up like them, and you don't have to have a horse and buggy and dress like them and all that other stuff, but they basically, they don't need the government. They don't need social services because they have their own social capital system. They don't need FHA. They don't need HUD. They don't need VA. They don't need no government-backed program for housing because they not only teach, but they participate in helping their children build their own house. Now, let's switch out of the Amish and the Mennonite community, and let's go to some of these Asian communities that might own a mini-mart or a gas station / mini-mart. So you've got, or a little carryout. So you've got, or a liquor store. So you've got, you know, by the time their kids reach 12, 14, 15, see, they've grown up in the business where the business is taking in $15,000, $20,000, $25,000 a day in receipts. And family business might be a mini-mart / gas station in a black neighborhood. Or a Chinese restaurant or carry out in a black neighborhood. So, you know, now you do have some, to be fair, you do have some black families on an entrepreneurial level that do teach their children these things. One reference point I would recommend is get a copy of Black Enterprise. Matter of fact, every month Black Enterprise has articles from black entrepreneurs, both men and women, that are doing very well. So that would be a good source of information and inspiration. And then they come out once a year with their Black Enterprise Industrial 100 businesses. And I think maybe the top 5 or 6 of those businesses are businesses, black businesses, that take in $1 billion or more a year. So you do have there are examples out here of people doing, black folk, African Americans that are doing well. And to my knowledge, none of them are asking for reparations. But in those households, those families are basically teaching their children how to take over the family business. I'm sure in most of those cases, they're training, they're grooming their children on how to take over the family business. So I do recommend Black Enterprise. That's probably the, there might be other magazines, but that's the one that I know about that's been around the longest. Matter of fact, Earl Gray Sr., he's passed on, but he started Black Enterprise Magazine, and his sons, he had 3 sons, now they run it. They run the magazine. Okay, so what was Earl Graves doing? You know, what one of his sons went to law school. And I think he had another one. He got an MBA, Masters of Business Administration. So, and that all while working in the family business from the bottom up. He didn't start them off in executive positions. They were doing grunt work, you know, probably before they were even teenagers. But he taught them the family business, which has to be publishing. And going back to Africa, traditionally, we were taught, you know, the family trade. So in any event, so all that's part of grown-ass man training. So, you know, you can link that to anything you want to. 619-768-2945. If you have any comments on Africa's Dirty Secret, like I said, we played all that yesterday, and then a little clip I played today on Trocracy, which goes on now in 2021, or any comment on the grown-ass man training from the Kevin Samuels point of view, or what's your point of view? What do you think is important to teach your children or grandchildren fundamentally when it comes to business? All right, we're going to play this one clip from Baby Boy and then come back.
Straight like my brother's soul. Yes, indeed. 7-Up cake. We got pound cake. And we...
Some of that pound cake.
Yes, indeed, brother. There you go. Thank you, brother. You have a good day today. Salam.
Today I begin a new life. For I am the master of my ability. And today is going to be a great and beautiful day.
What?
I said, today I begin a new life. For I am the master of my abilities. And today is going to be a great and beautiful day.
Pillows, goose down, $35.
P, you a buyer or a seller?
What? Videos, homie. Videos, DVDs, CDs, Master P, Charlie's Angel.
It's Look at yourself.
How many millionaires you got on, bruh? I count at least three.
Man, what the fuck are you talking about?
P, look around, man. You see what I see? I see money. Look at my man over there selling t-shirts. Brother over there selling pies and paper. Cake man over there. Everybody moving, making money, right? While we standing still being broke. I figured all this shit out, man. All this. This whole world moves forward through transactions. Commerce, nigga. The exchange of goods and services. All the real baller successful folks are sellers. And all the broke-ass people playing catch-up are buyers. I ain't trying to go out like that, Pete. I'm going to be a seller. I'm going to get my own business. Change the game.
All right, today's podcast, once again, is titled Grown Ass Man Training, inspired by Kevin Samuels. And here's a little exercise we can all do right now together. All right. Based on the clip I just played, I'm going to play it again because I want people to participate in this. How many, I want you to take a look at what you have on. The clothes that you have on your back right now, okay? And even if you're sitting butterball naked, you're sitting on a chair somewhere or whatever, I want you to, with the clothes that you have on your back or if you're sitting butterball naked, who made that couch or chair that you're sitting on or laying on? But if you got clothes on, how many millionaires are you wearing? Who made your socks? How much money are they making a year? Who made your pants, your shirt, your butt, whatever you got on? How many millionaires right now are you wearing? I think that's a very fundamental thing that a parent should teach a child. Matter of fact, my grandmother on my mother's side, she was, she only had like a fifth or sixth period of education. She wanted to have seven children. My mother was one of them. And actually she had nine, two passed, but when they were born or whatever. But she had seven that lived. And she taught, she had what, six girls and one boy. And she taught all of them how to make their own clothes. Which is basically a life skill. So they really didn't need to go and buy, they really didn't need to go to a department store and buy clothes. I mean, I'm sure all of them did, but she taught them how to make their own clothing patterns. And my mother was professionally a nurse, but her passion basically was a seamstress. She can look at something and sew it. She didn't even need a pattern. She was that good at it. But in any event, so I want you to take a, I'm going to play this clip one more time, and I want you guys to participate with this now. How many millionaires are you wearing?
Brother, break bread with me, brother. Got that pure cake, no butter, no sugar. Asiatic, straight like my brother's soul. Yes, indeed. 7-Up cake, we got pound cake. And we
some of that pound cake.
Yes, indeed, brother. There you go. Thank you, brother. You have a good day today. Salam.
Today I begin a new life, for I am the master of my abilities, and today is going to be a great and beautiful day.
What?
I said, today I begin a new life, for I am the master of my abilities, and today is going to be a great and beautiful day.
Pillows, pillows.
Goose down, $35.
P, you a buyer or a seller?
What? Videos, homie. Video? DVD? CD? Masterpiece? Charlie's Angel?
Look at yourself.
How many millionaires you got on, bruh? I count at least three.
Man, what the fuck are you talking about?
P, look around, man. See what I see? I see money. Look at my man over there selling t-shirts. Brother over there selling pies and paper. Cake man over there. Everybody moving, making money, right? While we standing still being broke. I figured all this shit out, man. All this. This whole world moves forward through transactions. Commerce, nigga. The exchange of goods and services. All the real baller successful folks are sellers. And all the broke-ass people playing catch-up are buyers. I ain't trying to go out like that, Pete. I'm going to be a seller. I'm going to get my own business. Change the game.
Another question to add on to that. How, right, for question number one is, how many millionaires are you wearing? That's question number one. Question number two is, how many of you who are listening, are you a buyer or are you a seller? Question number three, for the reparations crowd, how many people wanting reparations? If you have to classify them, are the majority of people that want reparations, are they buyers or are they sellers? Those are three questions. You can answer all three or you can answer one or, of course, add your comment in. We're talking about grown-ass man training today, 619-768-2945. Press 1 when you're ready to participate.
Hey, Bobby, why do you like soul food?
Because it makes me happy.
That's the piece like you used to say. That's the piece like you used to say. That's the piece like you used to say. That's the piece like you used to say.
Thank you.
is JB's a controversial figure, but James Brown, to answer the least the last question, one of the last questions, was James Brown was a seller. He had his own record label. He had radio stations to promote his records. He had a printing press to make his records. He had a publishing company. James Brown, good, bad, and ugly. He definitely was a seller. In any event, grown-ass man training, like I said, we covered a few topics today. Trocracy, modern-day slavery in Africa. Should African nations pay reparations? What else did we talk about? And then, of course, Kevin Samuels on what he calls grown-ass man training. Your thoughts on that. Anyway, 619-768-2945. Let's go to the phone lines here. 314, your mic is open.
What do you say, L.A.?
How's it going? I got caught up yesterday running errands.
You just got to pay reparations.
Well, now, pay it to who?
Those that were expecting you. Well, you know, you talked on several things. Evansville, you have to look at the people who's running the city council to understand why come they come up with something as wild as this. I hear where they, it's a town of 74,000 people.
Yeah.
They're gonna tax marijuana sales.
Mm-hmm.
And they're gonna give $25,000 out for people to fix up their houses. I think that's what I read. Did you read that too?
Yeah. Let's see. Let me go back to that article. Yeah, 25,000. Well, first thing, you have to prove that you're a descendant of somebody born between the years of 1919 to I think 1969.
Yeah.
Then you have to
slavery
prove
ended
in
1865, didn't it?
Yeah, it's 69 or something like that. Then you have to prove that. Well, let me go to this. Let me get the article.
Well, slavery ended in 1865. So how are they going to call it reparation for slavery?
Exactly.
And then, too,
and, you know,
how you
here's another thing. Here's another thing. Illinois was a free state. You had, matter of fact, the first black person, African American, that incorporated a black township and developed it, Frank McWhorter. He was a slave in, I think, Missouri. He went to Illinois and established the first black township. A year or two later, Mother Priscilla Baltimore, also born a slave, she started, Frank McWhorter started New Philadelphia, Illinois, which is now the ghost town. But a year or two later, Mother Priscilla Baltimore, a black woman, formerly born a slave, she founded the town of Brooklyn, Illinois, which still exists to this day. You also have...
Exactly. Brooklyn got by $5.
You also have Pembroke, Illinois, and Hopkins Park, Illinois. So these are four black townships. Huh?
You enter into Brooklyn off of Route 3.
Right.
And it's mostly nothing but strip clubs.
Yeah, that's
churches.
What it is now.
Yeah.
But the thing is, how are you going to have reparations anywhere in the state of Illinois when you got these black people starting townships in Illinois over 100 years old in Chicago, Cook County at least, which Chicago's a part of? You've got, God, I can name how many black millionaires live in Chicago, no, Cook County. The same
well,
time,
that's
I think
not the
Emerson's in Cook County.
I don't know. I think it's outside of Chicago.
It's outside of Chicago, but I don't know if it's in Cook County. All right, I'll look it up. Anyway, continue with your comment.
Well, the thing is that I was going to also make a point that this is supposed to be, according to the article, for improving your homes. And
yeah.
They can't say it was for had anything to do with slavery, because slavery ended in 1865.
Oh, Evanston is located in Cook County.
Okay. It ended in 1865, but they're going to tax marijuana, and this is an opportunity for Warren to go to get some whites to go apply for the home loan and be denied because they white.
Mm.
Because you're taxing a product that's being sold, a commodity that's being sold, and you're using the city to tax them. Well, the city is for all the residents, not just some of the residents. It's for all the residents. But that's all I got to say about that. You may mention go ahead.
Well, yeah, real quick, Evanston, Illinois, which is in Cook County. Cook County might be one of the places, it's got to be, if it's not the number one place, it's got to be one of the places per square foot where they have more black millionaires in the United States. John H. Johnson, Ebony Jet Magazine, that was in Cook County. George Johnson, Cook County. George and Joan Johnson with Johnson Products, Afro Sheen and all that. The backers, the original financial backers of Soul Train, Cook County. The Nation of Islam, Elijah Muhammad died. He had about $13 or $14 million in his bank account, and that's still
going
on.
Yeah, Nation of Islam money.
So the Cook County has a lot of black millionaires. I mean, probably more than.
Mm-hmm.
You probably have to go to maybe Prince George's County outside of D.C. and probably somewhere like Brooklyn, New York. Those are probably the top three places where you can find black millionaires. I know they got some black rich ones down in Texas as well. But so I can't see how Evanston, which is in Cook County, can even come up with this scheme of reparations. And slavery was abolished in 1863.
If you put enough people in a room, they'll come up with something. And you may mention that you're supposed to teach your kids to defend themselves against who? Did you mean?
Anybody.
All right, well, anyone that want to do them harm, I guess that's a good point. As far as Africa's tradition.
Well, let's take a look at nature. I'm a big fan of the animal plant. Let's take a look at nature. The creator, whatever you want to call the creator, equipped every living species of life form on this planet with some kind of way to defend themselves. Bees
That's
can
true.
Sting. Ants can bite. Sharks can bite and outswim you.
Trees produce
claws.
Bark.
Cats got, exactly. So every living creature. So I'm not judging, okay, all right, because I wasn't that Emmett Till thing, but martial arts, something. If you're gonna take me out, I'm gonna get a piece of you while you're trying to take me
yeah.
out.
Yeah. And you know another thing too, you making mention that blacks should sue Africa. Well, that's kind of difficult
well, yeah,
to do because you don't.
Slavery goes on in Africa right now.
Yeah, but it's not illegal. And also, why are you enslaved? People be enslaved for after they've committed something. In many cases, the time is war, or you done committed a crime, of which you can't pay restitution for. And
right.
people are confined for the restitution that their parents couldn't pay. And that just goes right on down the line. So blacks today who are descended.
And that's why I played, because we did it for, it was like 2.5 hours yesterday, and I played 11 minutes today. The Trokosi system, which is in Benin, Nigeria, Ghana, Benin, those places, the Trokosi system, for people that missed that, was essentially it's the enslavement of children, mostly they say girls, virgin girls, that if a parent or the sins of the parents or whatever, okay, the sins of the crimes of the parents, and with the parents' consent, like you said, it's not illegal in many places, in some, but it's legal. But for centuries, it was part of the culture. Trokosi, look it up on online. Like I said, we played 2.5 hours of this information yesterday. We played 11 minutes today, where the in this case with Trokosi, females, young females, are given to atone for crimes of that family or that person in that family, and if that particular young lady dies or runs away, then the elder or the priest in that particular community can go back to that family and enslave another person, usually female.
Well, it was all kind of systems. It wasn't just that there was a whole slew of systems that different ethnic groups use in their traditional ways of doing things like that.
Yeah. So
and,
what I'm saying,
you know,
is, okay, if you're talking about reparations, let's go all the way back to the source. If you've done a DNA test, and let's say, all right, I'm 50% or 70% Benin or Togo or whatever. Okay. Well, shouldn't Togo be paying out reparations?
Well, no, Togo shouldn't be paying reparations. The people that came,
that done their crime
in Togo,
right.
They one should
okay.
be paying
not the government, because you're right. It wasn't a government of any of those nations.
Basically,
it was
you owe those
people. Right.
You owe those people who are the descendants of the one that was done harm by your ancestors.
Well, in that case, okay, that's fair. Now let's bring this over to Evanston in Illinois, here in the United States. Well, if you felt that you've been wrong, then who? Because the city of Evanston didn't do it.
But it's
that'll
true.
Be interesting to see how that develops.
Well, yeah.
But as Umar Johnson said, and you've heard the audio on here I played before, Umar Johnson stated that there are white people, and I think this is the case with Evanston, Illinois, there are white people praying for black people to get reparations. Now, let's take this to Evanston. Let's take Umar's words and translate it to Evanston. There are white people in Evanston that hired lobbyists that crafted the legislation to get that passed, no, not that, that got voted and approved for last night, Monday night in Evanston, Illinois. Because those white people want to receive your $25,000 in reparations.
Let me ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Wouldn't you be? Are you ready? Aren't you glad? Are you going to take advantage of it? Aren't you
nope.
glad that they are getting this money?
Not me. I don't want a reparations check.
No, I'm not saying you want a reparations check, but you want people that's got money that can do business with you.
Oh yeah, in that case, yeah. I
so
want to be on the receiving end.
You are praying Yeah, not to say you in particular, but as the demonstration, you, me, would be praying that they do get reparations so that they can be exploited, that is, taking advantage of the opportunity that they got money and they need something that I can provide.
Yeah, yeah, I want to be on a receiver, not receiving in the government, but yeah, come to me and I'll take care of your housing needs.
Yeah, I'd be happy. I'll take them
for
on tour.
For the 25,000, you know,
whatever I can.
That
I'm glad that they're getting some money. Right. Yeah, I'm glad that they're getting the money. Mm-hmm. That's a good thing. So anyway, and you know another point too.
Right. Mm-hmm.
People like to say where they come from, right?
Yeah.
Well, the only thing that most people know about where they come from, unless they do DNA, really, that just, well, what they do is say if you boarded ships off the coast of Ghana, that don't mean that your ancestors came from Ghana. That means that they was at that departure location where they boarded a ship. But where did they come from? Within the interior of the country or adjacent country? You see the difference?
True, that is a major distinction.
Yeah, it is a major distinction. And it's a major distinction when you say that somebody stole you. Well, it wasn't the one that was running the ships that stole you. It wasn't the one that has set up their collection point on the shores. And then they would use the castles to store you and also commodities, because the castles was built to store commodities like rice and cocoa and stuff like that until the ship came that they could load it on to send it back to where its destination was. So they used the castles, the storage warehouses, not only for commodities, like corn, wheat, corn, cocoa, and bananas, but they also used it to store the people that they had gotten in the trade. And when they got enough, their ship came, they loaded it up, and off it went.
Yes.
So if
hold
you
on,
can't say that
Bianca,
the ship...
Hold on, Bianca. Let me unload some of these calls. 346, your mic is open. 346, you're probably on mute.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yeah, we can hear you now, yeah.
Yeah, I had the mute button. Good morning, L.A.
Hey, Warren, yeah, what's going on, man?
Oh, man, I'm doing all right.
Man, you can make some money. Go to Everson to represent a white person that's being denied because they're white.
You know, it's a whole can of worms going to be open with this, and just like Pianki was saying, first of all, people have to understand the difference between right and wrong in business decisions. As you were saying, you know, Dr. Umar Johnson is saying, you know, a whole bunch of people is praying. Why are they praying? Because they already know. Black folks get this reparations, you know, the majority of black folks are not going to do nothing useful with it but turn around and spend it and put it back in the hands of white folks. So that's why they're praying. But just because they're giving them reparations doesn't make it right. So if they do that, it's more of a business move. Same thing I told people with Colin Kaepernick. You know, just because Nike endorsed him and he got all these different awards and this and that, everybody, oh, he was right. No, Colin Kaepernick was not right. If you understand law, then you'll understand that Colin Kaepernick, as I used to tell people, yes, he had a right to protest any given time he wanted to. But that should have been done on his own time, because the Constitution is a contract between the government and the private citizens, not two private citizens. The NFL is not a government. It is considered as a private citizen. So when he signed up for the NFL, to sign up for the team out there in California, they hired him to play football, not to protest. And so this is the same thing we got here now. You know, people are looking at reparations and, you know, the turn of events that this happened, is it really based on law? Is it based on a business decision? You got more money in the economy, would you turn around and just put more money in white folks' hands? Because, again, the majority of people are not going to take that money. The majority of blacks are not going to take that money and do something useful with it and invest in the community. not going to do it.
Mm-hmm. Warren, what's your take on particularly things that a parent should teach their children, man training or daughter training, before they leave the house? I mean, should, like, the basics of the law be taught?
Well, yeah, but you definitely should have that. I've always said after I learned the law, there should be somebody in the house, in the family. And first of all, I think we have so much chaos now. When the family was destroyed, the family itself is a business. And I don't think a lot of us don't look at the family being a business. We look at all this romantic and sexual, and that's fine in its place, I guess. But it's more so as a business. So, in other words, if I get with a woman and marry a woman and we have children, I'm marrying this woman because she's gonna better me and I'm going to better her. And we bring in offspring, just going to, you know, help further progress. And so, you know, Muhammad Ali talked about it in his book. He gave success, so he honored both his mother and father for the success he had. So when you have a mother normally represents the nurturing side of the identity between man and woman. A mother's a nurturer. She nurtures the kids. So you can't expect no more from her than that. And the father represents that stern discipline, right and wrong, and knows how to direct and prepare the child, whether it be male or female, for the future. As a woman is supposed to teach, and of course they're erasing all that now. It's almost detrimental to start saying that because they want to call he, she, and she, he. But a woman should prepare her daughters for marriage. She should show her daughters how to cook, how to clean, how to take care of the house. These are things that were supposed to be taught. The father is supposed to teach his son how to be the protector and the provider and the ruler. These are things that are supposed to have been taught. But when children come and they don't have both examples, then they grow up missing things. And so this is the chaos that we have now. Most children, especially in the black community, have come out of single-family homes that were raised by mothers with no fathers in the home. And this is why we have the situation we have right now.
Okay. Well, yeah, I agree. Let's run to the next caller here real quick before we – well, we're going to go over time anyway, so – it doesn't matter. 410, your mic is open.
Congratulations. Hotep Brothers, how you doing? Before
fine.
I get started, I want to pay homage and respect to a basketball legend, D.C. legend, and a world legend, Elgin Baylor, one of the greatest.
Oh, that's right,
basketball players that's ever laced up some shoes. I don't know if you had the honor of seeing him while you were in D.C., but perfect gentleman. You know, and the things that he was able to do in basketball. He was before his time because everybody else is doing all the things that he brought into the league. So, hey, honor and respect to that brother, and I hope that when he gets with the ancestors that he can sit back now and look over his achievements.
Yeah, Elgin Baylor was a great one.
Very great. And he was better than Larry Bird, by the way, even in his old age. So you can take that and smoke it in your pipe. Anyway, oh, what tangled web we weave when we seek to deceive. I didn't know you guys was for reparations. But all of a sudden, when there's money involved, hey, you know, I hope they do get it because, hey, if I was out there, I'd try and get some of that money too. Well, if it's so bad, just like I say about taxes, don't take it. Let the white folks get it. Let us black folks get it just for it. You know, hey, that's dirty money to you guys. But all of a sudden, if you see an opportunity to get some, all of a sudden it's okay, you know. And I just like to take a moment to highlight all of these mass shootings that's going on in the white neighborhoods. You know, these boys are products of two-parent households shooting up and killing a bunch of people. You know, we always talk about Chicago, but we don't never talk about white boys when they shoot up the joint. And there's been a rash of them right here lately. And the thing is, I just want you color folk to know that, hey, look, not only Chicago has a bunch of shootings, but white folks get out there and they do just the same stuff we did. Now, as far as reparations is concerned, that thing you played yesterday really gave me some knowledge of what's going on. You know, I hear some people say, well, you know, what about those people that sold our forefathers in slavery? You know, those people deserve to be reimbursed, too. I'd like to have that conversation with someone that sold my forefathers. I pray for the day that I meet the African that sold my forefathers into slavery. I really want to have that conversation, just like I want to have that conversation with white folks that had them in slavery. They won't come forward because I put it out there. But the thing is, you know, we always have it twisted when it comes to reparations and come to black folks demanding justice. We believe that we black folks should just take everything lying down and don't complain. Just get kicked in the butt and take it and skin and grin. Now, this thing about are we buyers or sellers? I'm both, Brother L.A. I buy and sell. I've always done that. I was raised in business. I not only buy, but I sell. And I sell for a profit. So I don't do either or. I do both and. And if you're going to make it in this world, you've got to be a buyer and seller. You know, the thing is, if you can buy something and make a profit out of it, good. But I don't know anybody that can do one thing and not do the other. There are some people out here called consumers, yeah. But, you know, I've always been a buyer and seller. And that has really propelled me in life because, look, this home training thing, my father told me, because I was raised in business, he said, son, if you're going to go in business, go in the food business, because it'll do three things. Number one, it'll make you some money. Number two, if you ain't making money, it'll pay for itself while you're trying to make some money or figure out something to do. And number three, if neither one of the first two counts, you can eat while you're trying to figure out something else. So I've always had the home training, and plus where I lived at, I was always encouraged to always have some dirt under my feet, always own something. And with this thing about parents teaching their children life skills, it's nice. Parents do that, depending on whether they're negative or positive. But I think you've heard this famous saying that Hillary Clinton used to that stole from the Africans. She said, and Africans, she heard other African-Americans say it, it takes a village to raise a child. And that's why education is so vital. The thing is, yeah, I taught my son things that he should know to survive. And I taught him how to make a living, and I taught him how to do some business on his own. But unless you have a public forum to go in and teach a wide critical mass of people, it's not going to do any good to just have one or two with the knowledge. That's what we have now. We have one or two experts or one or two people in the neighborhood that know something. But what you're suggesting needs to be put in a public setting, in a public school. That's why public education really is a failure to our people because, see, the thing is, it doesn't address our needs. Now, what you voiced about knowing torts and knowing the legal things that you get in and out of, that should be put in our schools, you know, in our churches where a broad number of people would know what the heck's going on. Now, it's good that you teach it in your house, but when that child get out there, he's surrounded by a whole bunch of other people that don't know what the hell is going on. And that's why come we need to put the money out there and stop giving it lip service to go in and say, well, hey, you know what? My child needs to be trained differently from a white child or a Hispanic child. And Jews are very successful at doing that. And I bring them up because some people say, why you bring up other people in there? Because they have a perfect example of how this stuff goes. And the thing is, unless we get off our rusty dusties and we get out there and we we put money to what we say needs to be done. And we're always going to have this thing about, hey, you can't protect yourself and you don't know how to conduct your affairs in public. Because that's basically what it boils down to. Black men and black women don't know how to conduct themselves in the public sphere. And until we figure out how we need to do that to equip them with the right knowledge, we're always going to be slaves. And look, slavery didn't end in 1865. If you look around your neighborhood and you go outside your door and you look at the news and everything, black folks are still in slavery, regardless of whether you're conservative or liberal or independent. Anytime you have to go to another people for the things you need, you are a slave. And until you show me a community that takes care of the food, clothing, shelter, and transportation and health care, and it's black managed, you're a slave. Now, I don't give a damn if you're a millionaire or you're a poor heir. Black folks are still slaves because you got to depend on somebody else for everything you need. And look, we need to stop counting other folks' money. If those people in Evansville want to spend that money, that's not your business. Mind your business. If those black folks came up with an agreement or the lobbyists came up with it to help black folks, you're against it. Mind your business. That's their money. You have a favorite saying. Don't count other people's money. Stop counting.
Yeah, I have said that.
I brought it to your attention. But I do count other folks' money because when I go out there to try to make money, I always do a market assessment to see if it's worth me investing my money. But look, my thing to all of these people that's against reparations, if white folks want to enter an agreement to give black folks something, stop counting their damn money. That's all I got to say, and I'm through.
Okay. I like the idea of teaching on a mass level. I think
critical mass.
Although the churches could do it, because churches have these ministries. You know, the singles ministries, the sick and shut-in ministries, the AIDS ministry, the prison ministry. They could have a law literacy or one with what you call people's law study group ministry. Because a lot of these parents, when their son or daughter gets locked up, a lot of it, who do they call? Pastor, can you help me? Can you pray for me? So-and-so got locked up last night.
I think that's great, but I've talked to a bunch of preachers in this city, and they talk like, oh, yeah, but nobody's called, so they don't really want it. You know, I think they're more focused on probably much tithes and offering what they can do and whatever, because they don't really want that, because if they did, it would be a great ministry, because how do we get in the black community? Through the churches. Most black folks go to church. And so the churches would be a great place to institute the legal system, the judicial system, so you could teach people what their rights are. And I've always said the purpose of the People's Law Study Group was to level the playing field, because the reason why we got a higher percentage of black people in the prisons and in the jails is not so much a racism, but it's ignorance and illiteracy. And so when you cure that, then you can kind of fix the problem. When you teach black folks how to sue back, you know, and how to withstand things that they've been entrapped into, then you can change the game.
Well, you got that right. A lot of them not in jail that's ignorant and illiterate.
Well, once you get on the front lines with it, because I've known you about seven years now.
L.A.
Bianchi.
I heard something very disturbing. I just wonder if it included. What's the definition for slave?
That's a good question. Somebody that does something against their will?
Is it a formative definition? And I'm going to depend on your judgment.
Is there a legal definition? You know, let me look.
Yes.
Legal definition of slave. Let me look that up now.
Mr. Houston, how is your attendance at your events, your groups, law study groups?
Warren, you there?
What was that, Pionk?
I was going to ask you how your attendance has it improved at your law study groups.
Oh, I put it on ice for a little while.
Okay.
I definitely put it on ice. Yeah.
I know those conference calls you had. Were they on Monday nights, Warren?
Yeah. We used to do them every
night. Yeah, those were well attended, the ones that were online.
Well, they were well attended as long as I was giving away free information.
But
when we start talking about signing up and paying money, that's what a
whole different thing, huh?
Yeah.
It's interesting. A lot of these pastors, I don't understand, because like I say, these pastors, they get calls all the time when somebody gets locked up. And a lot of these churches do have prison ministries, but that's the back end. So it just seems like it should be common sense, Derek. What can we do on the front end so there won't be a back end? The back end will be smaller than what it is.
Well, I'm glad you said that, L.A. Maybe I'll take a different approach, because the pastors, supposed to be community leaders, they really have a little pull in the courts. In the court system.
Right.
But the problem is they themselves are illiterate to court rules and regulations. So you have, just like every coin has two sides, you got the heads and tails on the coin. Everything has two sides. That's one of the laws of nature. And so therefore, even with the law, you have what's called the letter of the law and you have the spirit of the law. The letter of the law deals with rules and regulations. It has nothing to do with emotions. But then you have the spirit of the law, where you're supposed to be able to appeal to somebody's human side of emotions. But you have to have a balance of that. You can't go in there half-cocked and one over the other. You have to have the intellect and the emotions balanced and knowing how to deal with the situation. And most pastors,
Brother,
all they have is the emotional aspect of it.
Did you come up, you find one, L.A.?
Brother L.A.
Well, it's one of the things it says slavery is not a crime in almost half the countries of the world. And this was dated on February 13, 2020.
Hey, Brother L.A.
I came up with a definition that says a person who is the legal property of another and is forced to obey him. So when I read that, I had to sigh a relief, because that don't include me.
Hey, Brother L.A., can I step in here for a minute?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Everything can be legally described. But the thing is, what my brother don't realize is he's the property of somebody or something. He is property. He's property of the United States government. He has to obey whatever they say. And until he can independently provide food, clothing, and shelter for himself, and he can finance whatever he wants to finance. But look, the thing is this. He doesn't print his own money. So the thing is, he can come up with all types of definitions he wants to. He's still a damn slave. So now, he can dance around it all he wants to. But he has to obey a constitution. And if he doesn't, they're going to lock his ass up, or either they're going to make him suffer.
So basically what you're saying is we're all slaves.
Thank you. So now, look, let me give you this. Let me give you these preachers and everything. You know, I sympathize with Brother Houston because, you know, he could provide a very valuable service to us. And you know what? He needs to come up. If I could afford it, and he would be willing, I would love for him to put together a template to go in and bring it to the community and teach, come up with a train-the-trainer program
so that it could be put in neighborhoods. Now, the thing is, he would have to come up with a task force, however how he wants to do it. And the thing is with this here, with these preachers, that's the worst thing you can do is go to a darn preacher. Because, look, with the exception of Creflo Dollar, T.D. Jakes, and all of them boys, most churches are community-based churches. I think I told you that. You know, mm-hmm. like these denominations and everything, the communities built those churches. I belong to a church that's 100-something years old. It belongs to the community I live in. We hire the preacher. He does what the hell we tell him to do. And the one thing that gets preachers, put them in line, is you have to let them know from whence their salaries come from. And the thing is, you have trustees and you have deacons. The trustees in our church handle church business. Those are the people that you go to in order to get things done in our church. The preacher is the, what do you call it, the CEO or what you call him?
CEO or the face of the church.
Well, what he is, he's the executive officer. But the trustees tell him what the hell to do. You know, when he needs a salary, he has to come to our trustee. When he wants to do something as far as a program or something, he has to answer to us. And that's where you have to go. But a preacher, now, these COGICs, Church of God in Christ, and MEZs and everything, they have the bishops and everything. But in the local community, those are the people that tell them where to go and how to get there. And if you go to a preacher, quite naturally, he's going to protect his interests. But the thing is, you go to those trustees, those are the ones that, if you can appeal to them, that's where it goes. But it needs to be a broader community. And like I said before, you know, people like Mr. Houston, once they put that template out there and they sell it to the community, you aren't going to get everybody. You always have that saying, a critical mass. You aren't going to get everybody, but those few that are enlightened. And see, that's the way these people did it back in the day. Malcolm X would go out in the hood and tell these people what he got. Marcus Garvey would go out in the hood and tell them what they got. And that's how they came up with that critical mass. But you're never going to get a preacher to go in and go with that because it takes away some of his power. And I get back up and let my brother come back on what I just said about this.
Ellie, I just sent you an email.
Okay.
Tell me what you think about it, brother.
Oh, I guess that's going on.
Yeah.
No, I'm talking about your boy, Pianki.
Ellie, I think your old man is crazy as hell.
Crazy like a fox.
Oh, boy. Always trying to insult somebody.
Well, sometimes it takes that to check people's consciousness.
Yeah, right.
Well,
What that email look like, Ellie?
No, I got to switch to my other phone.
Oh my goodness! You supposed to be sitting at a desk.
because I can't pull it up on my. I go between my phone and this laptop, and on the laptop I can't pull up my email.
Well, you know, if there's a such thing as critical mass, then why do people have to use these terminologies like we and us? Why don't they name that critical mass something specific? Like the Hope Squad or something.
Well,
we do wish.
Point.
Yeah. That's what I
Why does it have to have a name? Why does it have to have a name?
Wait, now hold up now, Beasley. That goes back to one of your mantras. Identity. You got to identify.
That's right.
Yeah, if you're going
to
be constant,
you know,
be constant all the way through.
Yeah, you
when you have an identity, you don't have to give it a name. All they have to do is see you in force. Now, look, I will give you this. There's 100 of us here that has put up a venture capital fund, And you can ask Brother Houston what a venture capital fund is. And this venture capital fund has, we have put seed money in it to buy the land around us at auctions and ever who wants to sell us the land. Now, we're going to take that land. I think I told you on my own, I own land. But
yeah,
here we have two things here, and I won't give you the project that we're going to set up here. But there's 100 of us that have pledged X amount of dollars, I won't tell you the dollars, to bring back the young folk in our neighborhood because our churches are dying. And we're going to take that and we're going to do what you say is a production all the way from the beginning all the way to the point of sale. So now, we don't have to have a name. See, that's a cracker's terminology. You have to have a name or a leader. We have a task.
Well, but you've already identified your church, though.
That this is separate from the church. These
okay. Oh,
sorry.
But you've identified a venture capital group that you're a part of.
Yeah. That's
what
but
I mean.
We don't.
So when we talk about we or they, that's the we or they in this specific example.
But we
yeah,
don't
you
have
can go
name
to that church and get them drunk, and they'll tell every damn thing they know. Who's who?
We ain't dealing with the church. We got 100 people that we were raised together. We figured we needed to do something. Now, we don't have a name.
Mm-hmm.
But we will have a legal identity here.
Where y'all
home,
keep the money at?
We have an agreement.
Where you keep the money at?
We have a bank account.
Stand by, Warren. You got a bank account. Whose name?
I'm not going to give you that. That's not germane to our conversation.
Well, wait a minute now. You say you don't have a name. How you open up a bank account, deposit money, and you don't have a name?
We got a name, but as far as the name out here,
well,
like
now you're lying.
About,
you said you didn't have a name. Look, let me tell you something. Don't come on here lying, because you're going to get caught.
Hey, look, all you got to do is just watch out smoke, brother.
You said you didn't. Wait a minute, but he said he didn't have a name. He opened a bank account. Now he's got a name.
We don't have a name.
Anyway, all right, hold on. Let's not get into a pissing contest now.
No, we ain't getting into that.
But
I'm just trying to point something out.
Right,
here's another thing, too. If you deposit more than $10,000 in your name, somebody's going to want to know where you got it from. And I'm telling.
Well, I'm,
so it must
I'm
not
sure
be all
Beasley's
that much money. It surely is
not
$10,000.
It's a private venture that I'm sure Beasley is keeping things private. He's just giving
well,
us an example
I wonder,
of.
Well, you know, but they, you know. Are we just looking at some details. It doesn't have a name. It opens a bank account. You got to have a name to open a bank account. Now all of a sudden he's got a name. He ain't telling nobody.
Why should I tell
you? But Beasley's not asking us for money, though. He's not asking us for money. He's just.
I ain't giving no money to no. I'm not giving no money to no name.
You're illustrating what you guys are doing in your community, right?
Yeah, that's a good thing. But we just asked. Did you check that email out?
No. Like I said, I got to open up another phone. I won't be able to get to it for a bit. But I just got my laptop, and I can't get through doing the laptop. But BZ, finish that out. Finish out your talk.
Like I said before, I don't have to give him anything. You know what, Brother L.A., all I can do is I can show you what we're doing. And, you know, we don't have to prove anything to him. As far as the name is concerned, we don't have to have a group name in order to do what we're doing. Now,
well, I'm sure in your neck of the woods, in the community, you know, the group of 100, you guys know everything you need to know in order to do this project. So,
yeah, we've already come up with the model and everything. But
right.
The thing is, look, Brother L.A., when the time comes, I'm gonna give it to you. You know, because everything that I've said on this program, I've always sent you something to back up what I've said. Now,
Ellie, I sent you a picture of my money. Don't share it with nobody. Maybe Warren, but don't share it with nobody. Show you how money is made.
Well,
but
the one
like
takeaway,
I said, don't
on,
share that
one,
with nobody.
One of the takeaways is Warren with this law thing. Like I said, if Warren could go back and I'm gonna see what I can do on my end, because like I said, a lot of these pastors that have a prison ministry set up, and you know what? Even if they don't, because a lot of pastors aren't. Creative, in my opinion. I say, you know what, just start your own outreach. You know, because like on Naima's show, Naima every now and then has, and Pianki and Warren, I know you're familiar with, I don't know if these listeners in Female Solution. They have these mothers that come on, and it's the same old, my son, well, usually his son got locked up. About maybe
well, you know what
years,
Warren
I
could do.
I might have people that come on like that.
Warren could go to the local schools, and they let him in to teach a course. If he's got a formulated course that he submit to, is something as low as a principal, and have access to a class. I have access to, and they probably got funds for him, too. You go to some principals, they have funds for your program to come in and work with some students. You know, I wouldn't go to them adults. Them adults ain't going to get nothing done. Go to the kids because they're the one that's going to be out there in the public every day exposing themselves to things. And all you need to do is have a name and some identification as it applies to the state, which I know you already have, and you're okay.
Yeah. Because a lot of these churches, you know, they got the First Lady Fund and
you wouldn't want to fool around no church. Churches ain't going to do a damn thing. He even went to Ray Hagin's church, and I don't think he was successful there. But anyway, I got to get going.
Okay, Pianki. Warren,
let me know
there?
What you think of that picture I sent you.
I will. Warren, you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, now you bought Ray Hagin. You bought him to Houston, right?
Yeah, I brought him to Houston. I came to St. Louis. I spoke in his church. Yeah.
Now, was he open to...
How many people was in attendance?
It wasn't that many. It was very few.
Yeah.
But there's very a whole
few.
Bunch of them.
I spoke on natural law. That was my topic when I was there, explaining how natural law works. If you remember, that's how I opened up my...
Right.
Law City Group class, letting people understand balance before we even got off.
You know, maybe a lot of us are too what do you call it, react instead of being proactive.
Emotional.
Yeah.
We react. We don't act.
Yeah. Because what you're talking about is called catching it on the front end. But
right.
I don't know what it is. When it's too late, when it's the 11th hour.
Well, it's two-minute warning. Two-minute warning logic.
Yeah.
Some of the ladies that have called Naima over the years, you heard it just like I have. About at least twice a year. I don't listen to my Naima every day, but a lot. I listen to a lot. So at least twice a year, she'll have these ladies calling, and it's the same. I've been listening to Naima for 7 years now. It's the
same
old
people.
Black
just
mother
like church
calls, and her son is in. He's already locked up.
Mm-hmm. Already talking about some relationship that
well, no,
you
I'm
ain't
talking
eating
about
right.
The lockup. I'm just talking about the mothers that call in on the lockup side. Those are why don't they call up Warren and Ray and get and their children get ahead of this on the front end to avoid a back end altogether?
Well, that's
something
they would have known. It's best to teach young people that so that they would know it when they run into these occurrences.
Well, you know what? That's probably you're
right.
Catch the young kids.
I would love for young people to know, okay, when the police stop you, what their rights are and what their rights aren't. Because if not, you can get something planted on you. You know, you can get some time. You know, they need to know this. You know, they need to know that when the Miranda rights is read to you, you know, you have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you. The police officer means just what he said. Anything you say can and will be used against you. Shut your mouth.
And you know something, Warren, I tell you what I do. I send you a link to some information that'll get you in a public school. Then once you get in there, then you can spread on to other things. I'll send it to you private. I ain't sharing it on there.
All right, well, it's 1 o'clock here.
And I know it works.
We're going to have Freeway Rick Ross on the last Friday of next month. But then I'll go over that tomorrow. Anyway, everybody have a good rest of the day.